on this episode of The Kinked Wire.
Dialysis, stroke, peripheral arterial disease, oncology. These affect patients of all races. We know with health inequities that black and brown patients and poor patients, uninsured, tend to be afflicted more. We can recruit the best and the brightest students across the country and across the world to be a part of the greatest specialty in all of medicine, and that's image-guided medicine.
Welcome to The Kinked Wire, the interventional radiology podcast from SIR's IR Quarterly Magazine. You can learn more at our website, sirweb.org/kinkedwire. In this episode, Kinked Wire host Warren Krakow speaks with interventional radiologist Vishal Kumar about educating med students about IR, the importance of fostering diversity, and how the two intersect with the SIR Foundation GEMS program.
Great. So we're really lucky to have Vishal Kumar here today. You know, until a minute ago, we've never met, but I have to say, I have heard nothing but wonderful things about you. I don't mean to add any pressure to the talk today, but I'm really looking forward to talking to you. Welcome, and thanks very much for being here.
Well, thank you, Warren. Those are very kind words. It's an absolute honor to be here. I've listened intently to the podcast, and I've been a huge fan.
Your interests seem really diverse, and I think, you know, that really ties into some of the things that we hope to talk about today, including the diversity and inclusion work that you've done. But your medical interests seem so varied in terms of doing interventional oncology and this other piece, which seems really strong for you, medical education. Do you mind just talking about that a little bit, how some of that worked out for you?
So just a little background about myself. I identify as an Asian male. My pronouns are he, him, and his. I started my career essentially undergraduate at UCLA. My parents are immigrants from India. I actually was born in Canada before we all moved to the United States. So technically, I'm, I guess, a Canadian as well. But I went to UCLA for undergrad and med school, and I studied genetics and immunology. And I initially wanted to be an oncologist or a cardiothoracic surgeon. I flirted with the idea of becoming a gynecology oncologist. I was fascinated by cancer altogether. And I think, like many students, I went through med school and was a little underwhelmed by the reality of many of the clinical and even surgical subspecialties. And recognizing how competitive integrated IR is today, I feel a little bad saying that I was fortunate enough to sort of have stumbled into the world of interventional radiology and radiology. You know, I was lucky to have been assigned a preceptor I did not even rank, that ended up being a diagnostic radiologist who was very familiar and facile with interventional procedures. Okay. And I remember as a third-year med student just being completely fascinated and stunned. I started to question everything I knew about medicine and asked why wasn't this something I was exposed to in my first 2 years of med school. And so I pursued my training. I was fortunate enough to be able to get into UCSF for residency after a transfer at Harbor. Completed an interventional radiology fellowship under Drs. LaBerge and Drs. Curlin, and I thought I was part of the best specialty in all of medicine. And I wanted to make it a personal mission to let as many students know about this specialty as possible. And that's kind of where I had a chance to meet Dr. Gioji Vatican-Cherry. And those who know him know he is incredibly passionate, brilliant about IR and his patients. He emphasizes the clinical aspect of IR, the future of IR as clinicians. And I wanted to be a part of the team that helped promote the education and outreach. Because ultimately, the more students that know about us, that means more referring providers know what we do. And potentially, some of those students can become future interventionalists. And we also recognize that in today's climate, we need physicians, nurses, and techs that reflect the values, the identities, the cultures of the same patients that we treat. Dialysis, stroke, peripheral arterial disease, oncology. These affect patients of all races. We know with health inequities that black and brown patients and poor patients, uninsured, tend to be afflicted more. We can recruit the best and the brightest students across the country and across the world to be a part of the greatest specialty in all of medicine, and that's image-guided medicine. So I wanted to be a part of that mission, and I think that's what I'm trying to hopefully achieve over the course of my career.
I can see now why everyone raved about you. Didn't take long for you to hit one out of the park. That's really just fascinating to me. And I think that's partly why it's important to have these kinds of conversations with so many different types of people, because you really weaved together everything well. And it just makes everything that you said just makes such complete sense in terms of integrating everything that we all seem to love and are drawn to about interventional radiology and making it available to everyone, no matter what walk of life or whatever background you might have. Is that something that you're finding to be a challenge, sort of taking that mission to the road and trying to improve the inclusion among, you know, we're talking specifically about interventional radiology, but, you know, let's be honest, this is a problem that affects all of healthcare.
Well, I mean, I think there's so many elements to that question. I think the biggest challenge that I've witnessed as sort of an educator looking at the broad landscape is that, first of all, diagnostic radiology is not a standard part of education across medical schools in this country.
That's really a good point.
Through a singular lens of looking at allopathic med school. As part of our outreach campaign, we realized that the DO student population, our osteopathic students, of which there are over 30,000, are not even being acknowledged in the DR and IR interest group sort of thinking. And we recognize so many of these institutions don't even have radiology faculty, regardless of diagnostic or interventional.
Mm.
So how in the world are these students going to get exposure, mentorship, experience for shadowing, for letters? How in the world can we try to improve the diversity of our workforce if we can't even get out to the students at many of these med schools?
Didn't you co-author a paper on online access in the pre-COVID, pre-Zoom era, which seems to be sort of a forward-thinking thing to do?
As you rightly said, in 2015, 2017, it was a totally different time. Still a very large focus on in-person learning. The virtual learning environment had not been embraced, and I don't think it's better. I think there's clearly a compromise in building community and engagement, but it is a potential tool. Early 2015, 2016, we looked at how many lacking interest groups are around the country. We identified many institutions that would potentially benefit from a virtual format, whether it was an interest group or symposium, just some way to engage. And then we had a virtual IR webinar series that really, I think, was able to impact a lot of participants. You know, we had over 190 institutions across multiple countries. It was a global sort of event every week. We had participants from multiple time zones. It was a lot of work, but I think it showed that there's potential for engagement in the virtual platform. And fast forward 5 years, it seems like everything now has moved to virtual.
For sure.
So I'm hoping that with this post-pandemic wave of new learning environments, we can really expand our outreach and efforts to create virtual mentorship programs, virtual interest groups, virtual lecture series. This week, in fact, we just started our URM Alliance with specific focus on our HBCUs, and we had an introductory IR session on Monday. And then sort of like day in the life of an IR yesterday with URM physicians from around the country who practice IR. And hopefully this is the step of something going forward.
That's terrific. And I think, you know, that really speaks to, again, sort of being ahead of the curve, which is something IR seemed always to be. You know, if you look at the history of IR, we always seem to be ahead of the curve. And I think in this way, you're ahead of the curve in terms of how best to reach out to folks who may not have access to IR, as you said. So you've got these sort of several roles that I find really fascinating. And one sort of aspect of this is this work that you've been doing with the diversity and inclusiveness track for SIR, as well as some of the education work that you've been doing. How do you integrate all of that yourself?
When I joined faculty, I had the sponsorship and support and mentorship of Dr. Mark Wilson, who is our chief at San Francisco General. And he nominated me to sit on the Diversity Equity Council for our department. And I was actively involved with a lot of outreach with high school students and college students through our GME. So it seemed like a very natural alignment. But as I was sitting in on these meetings, I started to reflect that to really be a contributing member, I think you have to understand what diversity, equity, inclusion really mean. You really have to understand the history of our country. We talk about racism in all of its forms. You know, we have to understand what personally mediated racism means. We have to understand what internalized racism means. We have to understand what structural elements are, the historical laws and policies that were set into place generations ago that have tremendous ramifications today. And the deeper you dive into this fund of knowledge that many faculty and professors have clearly published on before, the more you learn about it to be genuine, but also understand how it actually does affect so much of what we do in IR, from our outreach to our recruitment, to our wellness as attendings, our ability to be financially well off, our patient care, the health inequity side is something I feel like I'm just barely starting to really understand and grasp. So it's really all encompassing. And I think you make it part of your education, much like CMEs. I think we should push to have anti-racist and anti-oppressive education. It's something that we are constantly doing because there's so much to learn. And you realize that the civil rights issues of 1960 and 70 are not so different from what we are seeing today. History is repeating itself, and it's up to us to make sure we take it in the right direction.
That's a really good point, and I think very important to stress for all of us, you know, no matter what your vintage of training is, that everybody needs to pick this up. And I think that's a great analogy. It needs to be sort of like a CME, that you're doing continual education on these really important issues. Is that something that in the work you're doing in the GEMS, the Grant for the Education for Medical Students program, Dr. Matsumoto's creation, is that something you get into?
Yeah, that's a great discussion point. So as you said, the GEMS program, the Grants Educating Medical Students, was founded by Dr. Alan Matsumoto and a very generous endowment from himself and his family. And it's got the full support of SIR and the SIR staff. We had to undergo a tremendous pivot due to the pandemic because the GEMS program was initially intended to support students who were attending institutions without any IR exposure or opportunities. So we're hoping to get them to network, to do an away rotation, to get a letter of recommendation. And the pandemic turned that entire format upside down. So we really did pivot to a virtual environment. And the feedback we got from our 10 inaugural virtual GEM students was that it was a very positive experience. A couple students described it as the best learning experience during their medical school careers, which feels great, but is also kind of negative in terms of what that means medical education currently is for many of our students.
Yeah.
So I think we learned a lot from the virtual platform. I don't think you can ever have enough anti-oppressive education and elements. And I think we didn't cover a lot of subjects that I am now trying to integrate into the 2021 curriculum, as well as into our own curriculum at our UCSF program. And these are issues that talk about things like microaggressions, how to deal with them as a professional, how to deal with them in the learning environment, how to become, for example, an upstander instead of just a bystander, how to deal with what it means to be a perpetrator, because as we will start to realize, we are all potentially at risk of putting across microaggressions, whether they be micro-invalidations, micro-insults, you know, unintentional backhanded compliments. I witness this all too often. In a recent Yale Grand Rounds, I think a lecture delivered at Vanderbilt during their Diversity Inclusion Week, showed that up to 70% of our Black and brown students are experiencing these microaggressions every single day. And as a result, they are unlikely to recommend those residency training programs to their colleagues or be willing or wanting to stay for fellowship. So for all of those who have the luxury of being in the educating environment and the privilege, we should really hold ourselves to an extremely high standard and be familiar with these concepts.
Agreed. What progress have you seen since you got started in this work?
That's a good question. One of my colleagues says there can be no progress in the reality of oppression, and I understand the sentiment behind that. But I think we're starting to see, I think, the formation, for example, under Derek West's leadership, the URM section and SIR. Just this quarter, IR Quarterly released a cover story on the macro effect of microaggressions. I think you're seeing SIR throwing its support, willing to listen and engage in the dialogue that is necessary to really just to have ongoing and at all times, to show that we are focused on our patients. We want to ensure their experience and their access to this care is something that is at the forefront of our thinking. We know there are so many IR deserts, you know, around the country. Not everybody has access to the greatest image-guided therapies, and I think we need to take it upon ourselves to fill that gap. If we think that modern medicine is going to involve IR at every single hospital, that's a steep hill to climb, and we have a lot of work to do.
We've had the chance here to speak with Derek in the past, and there are many steep hills to climb, unfortunately. But it is a little bit heartening that there are people out there, and hopefully all of us, are making progress at least a little bit every day on these very important fronts. Because, I mean, for sure, it holds back a great number of really talented people. But it also, as you were sort of suggesting, hurts the patients, potentially, who don't have access to these services. And it hurts our specialty, quite frankly, that we're not as inclusive and diverse as we should be. So it's really encouraging to hear what's going on, and hopefully in the very near future. I'm sure you must have a lot of folks who are looking to go into interventional radiology come to you as a mentor or ask you questions about the field. What advice do you have to folks who are looking at a career in IR?
One of the things to emphasize is that students these days should be very honest with themselves. Pursuing a career, I think there's a much stronger emphasis on career-life balance, and balance is even a misnomer. Sometimes it's all career, sometimes it's all life. But you have to be comfortable and happy and content with diagnostic radiology as part of your career, whether or not you practice it 0 or 100%. And you have to understand the stresses and the uphill limitations of interventional radiology as they compare to business models, private practice models, understanding that burnout is a very real issue affecting not just IR, but physicians everywhere. But by having a community of supportive members, hopefully SIR can be an alliance in this regard, that we can improve the lifestyles of our faculty and our practicing partners and make IR a sustainable future with DR as a ally and not an adversary in the future.
That's great that there are, you know, so many positive voices now like that for our, you know, soon to be or our young trainees. We had a chance to talk to Barbara Hamilton not so long ago, and she echoed that theme as well. Felicia Speed and others have talked about burnout, and I've got a little bit more gray behind my ears probably than you do. So I never heard those things in training. So it's great that that's an important component now of where we're going as a specialty.
I just want to emphasize how critical I think Dr. Hamilton and Dr. Knudsen's work was this year at SIR's meeting on burnout. We're in fact integrating a panel with them this year at the GEMS program, and we hope they can share their wisdom with the students.
One thing we ask all of our folks that we have on, it's kind of a sometimes the toughest question, but if you couldn't be an interventional radiologist or weren't an interventional radiologist for whatever reason, what would you be doing instead?
I think I would have to find myself in teaching.
Okay.
I think education is just so rewarding and fulfilling to see a learner kind of grasp the idea and be able to teach what we do, and watching residents go from PGY1 to becoming full-fledged interventionalists is such a rewarding experience. I think I'd be a teacher somewhere.
That's great. And then, you know, I have to say, for the future of our specialty, we're lucky to have you where you are and helping to shape all those things, not just where to get the wire and the catheter, but, you know, every other aspect of quote-unquote training as well. Listen, I'd love to have you back. There's, like I said, several episodes worth of material I think we could cover, and look forward to having you back. Really want to thank you for taking the time, and I wish you all the best.
Well, Warren, thank you so much. I've been lucky to stand on the shoulders of Dr. Jean LaBerge, Bob Curlin, Ernie Ring, Mark Wilson, and I'm happy to impart whatever I can.
That was Dr. Vishal Kumar describing his roles in strengthening IR diversity in education. You can learn more about the SIR Foundation GEMS program on their website, sirfoundation.org. We thank Dr. Kumar for his time and you for listening to Think Wire. Our host is Dr. Warren Krakow. Our editor is Dr. Jamie Shaw. Our manager is Dr. Jason Fisher. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have any thoughts or ideas for us, drop us a line at irq@sirweb.org.